He take off the lid, shoot lots of geese them days, yeah. Yeah, and he'd line the boat and I'd be steering going upstream.
Did you line that with dogs or was he lining it?
No, yeah.
Was he pulling or did you have dogs pulling?
No, he just him. He got the rope over his foot, walked along the edge of the water. Uh-huh. Yeah. No kicker. Good old.
Who was that again?
No, Jack Welchek.
Jack Welchek.
Yeah. Welchek, yeah. Yeah, I used to think about that when I'd go around there. What we used to do long ago. Yeah.
Well, we better put a little introduction on this tape before I forget. Okay, we're back at Edgar Nolner's house. This is the Yukon Koyukuk Biographical Sketch Project. It's May 23rd, 1984. And I'm Wendy Arendale. We're in Galena, and this is tape two. Before we came in, you were telling a neat story outside. Can you tell that one again?
No, which was it? Two of us.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You were talking about the game warden and the beaver houses.
Oh yeah, we used to be 25 feet. We used to trap beaver, got to be 25 feet, or you get caught.
Uh-huh.
And then we back here one time on the end of the hill, this side there's a lake, and we had snares about 20 feet, I think, and he was going to go there, but there was open place, so he went just so far, and then he backed up. Then he took off, and we seen where he landed and took off. And he went behind beam station up in camping up there. And Handy and Bobby Ross, they had snares too close. He pulled it out. He just looked at it that day and nothing into it. He stuck it up in the snow. Then he went across Loudon, and Jimmy and Paddy and them had snares back there close. You see where he started checking, but he fell in. And so he took off from there. And Jimmy said, I wish he went through and stayed there. But he made it, he didn't want it. Yeah. One time there was a guy, Larson. He had two kids on that big and camping up there in the slough, and he killed a cow and two calves, nothing to eat. There was no store here. He couldn't catch nothing to buy grub with. And the only time we get grub, we go down Koyukuk if we get skin or something. And Sam White was coming down, and just that day, Larson and them, they went across on this side in the lakes and set a few muskrat traps so they can catch something to eat. And he see the trail, so he landed in the slough and he walked up the bank at the cabin, Larson's cabin. And he asked him, who's trapping over there? He said, me. It was close in November. November, I think. It was close anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked over the cache and he see cow, moose head over there, cow. So he walked over there. It was so high, he could hear a big guy anyway. And, he said, cow hit him. He arrested Larson. And he came down, Galena, he got them kids down, and he took Larson down to the ladder. And Larson got 60 days, $60 fine. But Larson didn't say nothing. And the next year, Sam White was at Weisby's store down here, and was all in front room, and Sam White said, anybody that's out got nothing to eat can kill any kind of moose. And Larson said, look at that guy, how he talk after he had me 60 days and $60 fine, he said. I had nothing to eat, nothing for the kids to eat, no flour, no nothing. And you hear that guy talking about Yeah, that's a, he could have got out, but he didn't say nothing. He got nothing, couldn't kiss nothing. No way, no pension them days, mm-hmm. or nothing at all. Mm-hmm. Used to have a hard time. I used to kill about eight or 10, 12 moose a year. I sneak out and I give lots of people, they got nothing. I give them meat here mm-hmm. and there. Just, mm-hmm. I used to walk sometimes 12 hours. One time I walked 18 hours, but I didn't get that. 6 o'clock in the morning, start out, 12 o'clock at night, come back. Just walk all the time. Mm-hmm. Till one time I had 9 days to get one moose.
Wow.
He gave up, I guess, or I don't know. He got tired.
He got tired of walking, huh?
Yeah, I used to give lots of them, just like Robert used to camp up there at Slough with me. He never got a moose. I gave him all the meat, lots of meat, all winter long. Yeah.
No. When you say Robert.
Robert Damaski, uh-huh. He died a few years ago. And that's when I used to give meat.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think the game wardens did things like that? Did they just not understand, or?
I don't know. He didn't even try to check Larson's house, see if he got grub mm-hmm. in there or nothing.
Uh-huh.
He just wanted to arrest that Larson, that's all. Mm. That's Catherine Atlas' dad. You know Catherine
mm-hmm,
Atla?
Mm-hmm.
That's his dad, Larson.
Oh, yes, okay, right.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. He could have got out of it, but he didn't say nothing. This Max Hondorf's dad, old Max, that's the one that was commissioner at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I always tease Max, his son down here about it. I tell him, I tell you, old man was commissioner when he gone. See, about 6 months, 6 years old, and he pull out his pipe and put tobacco in, he shoved down a little harder, and he say, 6 months and $60 pound. How's that? He pissed a little harder. I tell him, he put Max down here would laugh. Just like when they arrest somebody, just like David Madrose and Jimmy Silas, they used to get 6 months every time they fight or something. And then, David Madras was telling one time, he said, you know that commissioner over there, he said, he don't know nothing but that 6 months. 6 months. He always, when he put us in jail, he said, he gave us 6 months, 6 months, not 5 months or 4 months or 3 months, he said, just 6 months. And he could always fill up his pipe and shove down on that tobacco first. He shove a little harder and he said, 6 months. He's to get a kick out of that when you tell me about it. Yeah, and there's one guy, he's living down here this year, for cousin Heyman. He killed the moose over there. He cleaned it up, cut it, skinned it, everything.
Mm-hmm.
But he was scared to haul it when they arrested Larson. He asked me, he said, you want to haul meat for me? He said, you can take half. I said, okay. I start in the evening, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I said, before dark. I get over there and it's getting dark and I come back dark. And so Jimmy and them do watch for Sam White if you're going to come back. If they were come back, they were going to go over and meet me.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tell me, we'll put it away. But when I'm coming back, nobody meets me. I know Sam White is down the ladder here.
When people had to serve time like that, where did they serve it?
Oh, they used to be down the ladder. Sometimes they sent them Fairbanks.
Uh-huh.
Well, they have jail down there full all the time down the ladder.
Did many people have to serve time for game violations like that?
Just a few, I think. Uh-huh. But I always go out when it's, I watch the weather, mm-hmm. snowing and blowing, no airplane going to fly. Let go out. And then time I shot a moose for Jack Slough. And then I covered it up. Then it blow and snow. We do it there about a month, and then we make trail along there to the beaver house, and in the evening, they had races down here that time. Always haul wood, and they never look at me when I haul some meat, but they think I haul wood or something. Last of the time, he said, nobody know you haul meat. He said, yeah, because every day you're hauling something. He said, nobody don't think you're hauling meat or nothing. Yeah. One time I killed a moose down here. It was a long time then we made trail. And we had about 12 dogs. Kevin turned 2 towns. And she was on the handlebars. And she was running through the village with a big sleigh load of meat. Yeah. Look at that, you just turned me loose. With a sleigh load of meat. But nobody came around who would look at us, but you know. We always start late and then come back dark. There's no airplane flying in daytime. Daytime you can see. He can see you hauling something.
From the air.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But when it started to get dark, it come back dark and nobody gonna watch you.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Did people have much trouble with game wardens with fishing, or was it mainly with the moose?
There's moose, it's a
mm-hmm.
One time Frank Albert and had the roadhouse 9 miles from the Moore Cochrane. And we were down here first, they were coming up, Frank Dufresne, and I've got the others. He was getting warden a long time. He used to be on the papers all the time. And he came up, and we was out. And we came back, and they were there, they were down here. And they were going up, and when they got to 9 mile point, where Big Albert had roadhouse, they had to stay overnight. Cold, and then they eat fresh, moose was closed, and they eat fresh moose meat, but they didn't say nothing, that meat tastes good, and then they had to have a place to sleep too, to stay overnight.
They figured if they arrested him, they might get thrown out, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, they're still about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we might go back a little bit. And do you remember when the first time you saw, or first time game wardens became very active in this area? Was Sam White?
Sam White.
Do you remember about when he started?
No. That's quite a while ago.
Uh-huh. But he was sort of the first one, huh?
That's around the 30s.
Uh-huh.
Adult in the 30s, but before that. Of course, he landed down here, and an airplane came. He had a little swallow plane, the open plane, to mm-hmm. Sam White. And an airplane came, and then he started to take off. And they watch him. And Megan, the teacher, Mrs. Megan was teacher here, and Megan was there too. And he started to take off down the river. And then the front skis come up. The tail ski still under the snow, sliding down to watch him. And the ski front one left and back one is still on the snow going down there. And the pilot on this mail plane said, gee, that guy don't know how to take off yet. Megan said, that must be the safest way. He said, you want to make sure the front one get up. Yeah. And then he fly for wind, I don't know how many years too. And the boys up at Hoosler, they said, gee, they hated to fly with him because every time he land, he hit hard and then he'd come up, jump up, and then hit again, and then jump up, and then slide. Not like these pilots that you just go even, but he used to just hit hard and go way up and then hit again, and that's where he used to land. They said, hard on our stomach. Yeah.
I didn't realize Sam White had flown as a pilot.
He flew for Wing for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was a big guy.
Yeah. But he believed in hard landing.
Tony Jacob, he's up nowhere. I guess Tony was up there someplace, and Sam White going by. He shot at Sam White, and you see where he shot through his airplane, but he didn't know where that bullet. He didn't know where that bullet went through.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. After that, when he landed, and then he found out way after that there was a bullet hole right through his airplane, way behind him. Tony Jacob, he shot himself. You know. He's kind of crazy anyway. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we should go back and pick up kind of where we left off a little bit this afternoon.
Yeah.
We were talking about what it was like when you were a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I should ask you, you know, we should just kind of move on from there and talk a little bit about your life from the time after you were a teenager on. As you became a young man, when did you start really doing the things that an adult man would do? Did you start as a teenager, or did you start?
Yeah, I was around 18 when I first got married to Angie.
Mm-hmm.
Around 18. Yeah, about 18, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There's Josephine and Mary, and there's eight. There's Josephine, Mary, and Celia, and Flo, and Angel, and Jean,
mm-hmm.
Cooper, Christopher, and there's Gabriel, and Patty, and Albert. Barney, he drowned himself down here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is your married to your first wife, Ann Jean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She died a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I was here in Galena when she died, and I went to her funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Did you live here in Galena?
Hmm?
Did you and Ann Jean live here in Galena?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't give no place. Just around here all my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you have like a cabin or?
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. A log cabin.
Mm-hmm. But it went in the bank cave. The bank was way out down the village, and we had big gardens. When old man first moved down here in 1922, them buildings and then big garden in front, two big ones.
Mm.
And then they went in, and pretty soon the buildings come up to the buildings too. Mm. They tore them down too.
Mm. When we first came in from outside just a few minutes ago, you were talking about gardens. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you did when you started gardening here?
Garden?
Yeah.
Well, we had them gardens, and we, springtime, we used to dig it up with shovel, hot sunshine, and yeah, three of us. But my cousin Lincoln Stockman, he used to help us too.
Uh-huh.
We dig it up. Mm-hmm. All the time we just dig up all the roots and everything, get it ready for the spring.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we moved down here in 1920, spring. We went up gone and cut logs, brought it down here, and then that summer we moved, tear them buildings down, make a raft, come down here, put up them buildings. That fall we had to dig up them gardens too.
Mm.
Between. But we had garden up at Loudon Slough and at Loudon, the hillside.
Mm-hmm.
Had lots of potatoes there and cabbage, turnips, carrots and things. Old man used to work on the gardens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Your dad liked to garden then, huh?
Yeah, he gardened all the time. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Do you like to garden?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But not hard for us now, you know, when you kneel down, it's hard to get up our legs, like long ago. It's just like her too. She like work on the garden, but she have a hard time to get up her. That's how much. We're going to have a little garden this time. Because there's two of us, that's all. Mm-hmm. Only Archie. He got his own place over there, but that's all help us around here.
Oh, that's very nice.
Mm-hmm. And Larry. Larry is shorter than Archie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But he weighs Archie. I started to get good anchors. I got on a scale. I weighed 140 low hurry. He got on a scale and asked him, how much do you weigh? He said, 246 pounds.
He's a big guy.
Yeah, he's small, but yeah.
Where did your dad get the seed?
Hmm?
Where did your dad get his garden seed? Do you remember?
I don't know. I wouldn't know. But he used to get potato seeds from outside, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Somebody ordered potatoes from outside first. And everybody, lots of people used to have gardens, like Stockman, Bill Honey, and all lots of them. Yeah.
Did they ever sell any of the garden stuff in the store?
Yeah, old man used to sell some stuff from the, we used to get about 2,500 pound potatoes and things like that. Then he sell potatoes all winter. Yeah. Order them outside potatoes, but you see it's too dry. When you cook them, it should look too dry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's very different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure they didn't have the varieties that were adapted to Alaska like they do now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you have problems with animals getting in the garden?
No. Uh-uh. There's no animals around.
Didn't have to fence.
Well, we
anything.
Have fence all the way around.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of rabbits and
mm-hmm.
things like that.
The cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah. We used to go down Old Village, sunshine, and we sweating, got to work on the garden. Got to go down and hoe the garden and pull the weeds. And yeah. Yeah.
But I'll bet that fresh stuff tasted good, though. And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's take a little break.
Okay. Long ago, about 10, 12 teams, something like that, go hunt caribou. With that big hill way back there, we go above there, caribou. Whole bunch go same time, go out there, we have lots of fun. We get about enough for sleigh load, and then we all come back, all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we get about 20. And then all about two apiece, they're fat springtime.
Mm.
They had over 5,000 reindeer behind cock ranch one time. They brought some up with a logging when they're bringing them up. And Cap Crane, Cap Williams, they're taking them up behind cock ranch that time. And I don't know, how many hundred, not too many. And they had around 5,000 after that. They sold lots in Ruby,
mm-hmm.
to mining
mm-hmm.
camps.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, after that, they all scattered, got mixed up with the caribou. And we used to hunt caribou. And I seen one white, all white reindeer too, but they're wild.
I've heard about that they occasionally have an albino one.
All white. I tried to get them, but it just went over the, going over the hill. I seen not too far too, but it was going over the hill. All white.
When that whole bunch of you would go out, what time of year was that?
Oh, we go around in March, uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
And then we go out this way. Sometimes we go up and then over the hill, way up around above UK.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
That way, once we hold me and Lincoln, he's Lincoln Tosky. We hold a little over three caribou. We had about 14, 15 dogs.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. We're strong dogs too. Mm-hmm. Charlie Evans, oh, lots of us. They're all near all gone now, the people.
Mm-hmm.
Only Charlie and I left us all, I guess. Great many people I used to hunt with, they're all gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In those years when you and Ann Jean were married and your kids were fairly young, what did you do in the summer?
Fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we fish all the time. We used to fish up camps in place.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Where was your camp usually?
Up only long, sometime up Loudon, and then we moved back over there where we get camped now.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Sometime we used to fish down here mostly long ago.
Uh-huh.
We used to get about 2,000 fish a night in the fish wheel.
Uh-huh.
Everybody caught fish. Uh-huh. Everybody got dogs and uh-huh. There's a fish racks all along the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah. We used to fish at Jimmy's place where Hazel got a camp, above there. And I used to fish above Ruby too.
Mm-hmm.
But two summers, I think, I fished above Ruby too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, for another, most of the time I work CA back here and FAA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where did you store those fish out at camp, or did you bring them back here?
Oh, we bring them back here.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Bring them back in the boat and put them in the cache.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
How many caches did you have for all of that?
No, just, we had one big cache.
Uh-huh.
But we're just getting up for the winter, that's all.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Last one, they cut for you a bit. Not even 1,000, they got 7 dogs, and they think that's enough for all winter.
Mm.
We figure about 250 fish for each dog, and 300 fish for each dog, and then we always have lots of leftover.
Mm-hmm.
But them other guys, they can't figure, I guess, and they always run short middle of the winter.
Mm.
You know, some guys say, well, they got enough fish. I told them, you guys going to run that middle of the winter. And they always do that every time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Do you remember what year you started doing wage work?
Hmm?
What year you started with working wage work? You said you worked for. I didn't catch the play. You said you worked for FAA.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't catch who you worked.
You used to call CAA.
CAA.
Mm-hmm. Civil Aeronautics.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they just changed the name, that's all. It's the same, but
they just
changed it to FAA.
Uh-huh.
See?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It used to be C first.
Yeah.
Civil. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. When did you start working for them? Do you remember what year?
No, when they first started work on the field down here.
Oh.
That's a 40 or 41. 40, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, 40. Of course, some of 40. I used to work for the Severs up here for the towers are up there.
Mm-hmm.
All that fall and next summer I used to work for CAA. All them guys, they work for contractors.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they get paid every week, they get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Spend them right there. They drink right there, mm-hmm. them guys. But I work for, and some boys were working with me that time. They want to know when they going to get paid. They want to drink too, but can't. I told them it never spoiled. Like I work by CA, and our checks come. They say our checks come. I never go to their office. And 2-3 days after that, they asked me, he said, when are you going to get your check? I said, never spoil, I says. And these other guys, they get it already. They spend it already right there. They on the drink and, yeah, cool liquor store. And I said, never spoil when it's there. Mm. Yeah.
What did you do for the CAA?
Oh, work on the runway and up the road and up from towers.
Uh-huh.
And around the shop and.
Uh-huh. Was it operating equipment or?
No,
or?
I just drove trucks and
uh-huh.
work on the runway, them lights and
uh-huh.
all lots of things. Mm-hmm. Every day, 8 hours a day, and then Saturday it's a time and a half.
Mm.
But on the boat was different. Double straight time, 5 days. Saturday you get time and a half. Sunday you get double time. So you're out.
When you work on the boat, you did a 6 hour watch or?
Oh yeah, when we were traveling, 6 hours on, then I'd be sleeping 6 hours, and Charlie would be doing 6 hours, and he'd sleep six, take turns like that. When it's dark in the fall, we tie up and then go start out early in the morning, because we don't want to get stuck on the sandbar.
No.
When it's foggy, we have to tie up too.
Yeah, yeah. So when the FAA took over, were you doing the same sorts of things as when you worked for the CAA?
It's the same. They just changed the name at all. I see when their planes landed yesterday, I think, yesterday down here.
What kind of a impact did all that have? I mean, that was all. Am I right in remembering that is all tied in with World War II? That runway was built in part because of World War II and the planes going to
Siberia. Yeah, Russian's plane. Yeah. They go to Fairbanks and they bring them Russians. They bring it here, and from there they go over Nome.
Did you get a chance to meet any of those Russians?
No, we never go around there. Sometimes they got about 50 planes there at a time, and then they bombers and fighter planes.
How did people in Galena react to having that airstrip built and having the military come in here?
Well, they were going to build down below Palo Mountain. They call West Ruby on the hill, but it was very good down there. So they had to build it right away, so they came up here and they built it down here.
Were people happy about that, or were they upset?
Oh, yeah.
How did they feel?
The CA guys, they were glad they come up here, because they're in the mud this much every day. It's kind of swampy and kind of water. I forgot how many percent of water there is. But they had to build the runway right away, because them Japs was coming over this way, to run the island.
How did Galena people feel about having that happen?
Well, I guess everybody had a job from Caltech, Nalala, Kaikuk, and from Ruby. Lots of people here at that time. Tents all over.
People living in tents because there weren't enough houses, is that it?
No, there were no houses.
So that must have meant, did that mean kind of a change in people's lifestyle?
I guess so, because everybody had to work.
Was there more cash available to people because of that, or did that make not
yeah,
make a big
I
difference?
Guess so. Yeah, everybody had jobs, because no other jobs anyway.
What happened after, all the big construction push was done? What happened to the people that
They all went home.
And they all went home?
Last one went home broke, I guess. Yeah.
How do people in Galena feel now about having the runway and the military here?
All right, I guess so. We never bother them. We never go around there. They always say, "Gonna be meeting." We never even go to meeting. Just we stay around the house. That's all.
When you were young and your children were, when you were married not too long and your children were young, what kind of things did you do the rest of the year? You said you fished in the summer. What did you do in the fall?
Hunt?
Moose?
Everybody go out hunt moose every fall.
And then what after that?
Not very much.
When did you trap then?
Winter time we trap, but. Mm-hmm.
When did trapping season start?
In November.
And what kind of things did you trap mostly those days?
Well, there's a fox and link and mink and marten. That's about all, I mm-hmm. guess, now. That's very many around now.
And then what in the spring? And then
we used to go out spring camp long ago, but no more muskrat too. Robert Atlas said he seen one. He went out all night. He seen one. He said, as soon as he seen him, it dived. And he said, person came out. I stayed there a long time. When he go down, he said, I run there and wait, he said. Person way over there, he said. And when he dived, I run over there, he said. He said, that muskrat was smarter than me. He said, I never got him. He said, only one muskrat I seen too, he said. Gee, used to be lots of muskrat everywhere. This lake, we used to be lots in here too. Yeah. No more, nothing.
And would that be when you were talking earlier about trapping beavers? Is spring when you would trap beaver too?
Yeah, March.
March.
February, uh-huh. March, her and I, we used to go out. We used to get about 40 sometimes. So only us go out, hazelnuts all go out too, and I've got, somebody else. Nobody go out because they don't like to walk ahead dogs, big trail. She's behind me with a big sleigh tent and still we're going to camp over. Now we go all over and we haul the tent back. We leave the tent someplace and come back. And we used to have tents around Bear Creek. Look at trap and when they start to get dark, we just pitch up and come home. Yeah. They had good dogs too.
Sounds like you had a good time doing that.
Yeah, her and I were just what? I put her in a big sleigh and coming through the portage, sleeping there, turn over, she's inside the sleigh. Well, then we started to hitch up. We have to go out and out that way. And then I started to put on my parky. I had to turn it over. Them dogs were jerking and they broke the snubbing line.
Oh no.
And she was alongside the sleigh. And she just going around that sleigh, was making the turn. She was hanging on to the side of the sleigh like this, going making the turn. And I was hollering and running behind and going up the road. She finally got behind the sleigh and she put on the brake and she stopped the team. 12 dogs.
Oh, that was quite a feat.
Yeah. And Raymond Stickman was standing on the bank. You see them dogs coming, but you know, she's about ready to get behind the sleigh on the brake. So he said, he just stand there. Oh, he was scared of them dogs too, I guess.
Were some of your dogs kind of fierce?
No, they're
pretty.
No, none of our dogs bite or nothing. They're all friendly dogs, yeah.
We've been trying to get that one here for quite a while, that mosquito. Do you have any, you know, since you've raised dogs all these years, do you have any special dogs that you remember? A leader maybe, or just one of the dogs on your team, or maybe a couple that you really remember especially well?
Only my leader, I used to call Dixie. When I raced in Rubenwood, they were smart dogs, all of them. And just one word. Before I moved down here, spring 1919, Stockman and I went over to the mine. He was down the sticks, some claims over there. And he had 7 dogs. And he had a bird dog for a leader. And good leader too, but and he asked me, he said, you want to take your leader? I said, yeah. And I put him alongside the leader. We went over lots of rabbits some days. And we stayed over there in the Billy O'Brien's place 2 days. He staked claims. And when we started, before we started in the morning, we stretched out the harness. I hitched up my dog first. And Then his dogs were jerking. Pretty soon they broke a tow line. Only two dogs on the sled. And then five dogs took off down, which was glazed, little snow on there. Long which it's all wide from the cabin down. I hollered, Dixie. And I said, come back here. And he was going like this, and he just turned them dogs around and come right back to me.
Mm.
Just only, I hollered only twice. I said, Dixie, come back here. And then come right back. And Stockman hollered. He said, well, look what my leader done. We had eight dogs. He said, if it was your leader, we would have to walk to Loudon. I don't think they would go very far because that bird dog, every time he tried rabbits going across, he wanted to go after the rabbits, but my leader just keep him right on the trail, right on the trail.
Uh-huh.
Big gray one.
Uh-huh.
They're all not too big, not too small.
Uh-huh.
I hold out, 250 cord wood, half a cord every trip.
Mm.
And
strong dogs.
Yeah, they're tough. And when I hit them up, nobody can move them dogs when I hold wood. Even my brother George and Walter and Lizzie, my sister, they drive them, they hit them up, they drive them, haul water with them, and they use them. But when I hit them up, they can't even move them dogs back to the barn, up the boxes.
Uh-huh.
They just sit there.
Uh-huh.
They just look at me.
Uh-huh.
I see. And they go. But nobody can. They try to do, I leave them out there by the wood. And then them guys, last guys haul wood. When they come there, they try to move them. Can't do it. They got to see me first.
Uh-huh.
Before they just sit there. They hit them with a sling now, the wheel dog. They just sit there. They were smart dogs.
Sounds like a wonderful team.
Mm-hmm. And up this way, Uncle Little Charlie had a tent there, and he was cutting wood. I hauled out 7-8 cords, and then I have a new cut bank, and I leave this rest down there, and I had wood slip. I hauled wood, and then I get through, then I didn't snap them by sled, and they go down ahead of me, and when they get to that rest, I say, whoa, they stop, and then snap them on. They ain't going to run away. And when I hunt wild grass, leave them in the place. They ain't going to move till I tell them to.
Uh-huh.
Could go over in the slough, shoot wild grass, and come out way up there. I say, they come to me, put wild grass in the sleigh, and then they go up in the woods, come out way up there. Same way, turn around, come on back. Same way. They ain't going to run away from me. They're going to sit there, even all night, if I don't say nothing. They were smart dogs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you must have trained them well, too.
Oh, I had one. George had one. And all of us had one dog apiece, and we just talk with them. We'd come in and have window puffs. We'd talk with them, and the Dixie Valier, there was a little spring above Loudon. I'd go up in the evening, get a couple of buckets of water, and then eat at the canoe. And then put a couple of cans in the canoe, and then got harness on him, and then he lined the canoe all the way up to the fish weir.
Uh-huh.
Put water in it, and then he'd sit down behind me, and then I paddled down. He never moved to. Yeah.
Did you use your dogs much for lining other than that?
No, there used to be lots of people used to, no kickers, they used to use dogs, tree
uh-huh.
dogs.
Uh-huh.
And then we just water, stick in the water, they tell them, gee, they go around the stick. And then some of them are pretty smart, yeah. Go up the river.
Susie Williams has told me about some remarkable dogs that she's known about in her time here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really neat. If you were to give young people who want to learn about mushing today some advice, what would you tell them?
Well, they're done by themselves, I guess. Just tell them once and then they need it all.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody, too many snow machines right now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They're spoiled already.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Just like my old man at the old village, he used to carry mail from there once a month to Tanana and back down rowboat. And then from Ulvalis down to Caltech once a month. And then downstream you can float all the way down, but sure. Going up, he's got a row or a pole or line the boat all the way up. No kickers them days. He used to work hard.
Well, I've heard people talk about that sort of thing down further down the Yukon, and I just always assumed that people up here had to do the same thing, you know, when there weren't, you know, before there were kicker boats. Do you remember when the first inboards came along on the Yukon?
Well, they had some steam, we used to see steam engines and all that. The first kicker we got, we had old man ordered three, and we had one for 9 years because these other guys, they break down and they no more parts and they give it back to us and then they use parts. And,
do you remember about what year that was?
It was around, I think around 1916, long in there.
Real early then.
Oh, 16 or 15, 16, long in there.
And it lasted 9 years.
Because we take care of it.
Was that a two-cycle engine?
No, kicker, they call two and a half farrow. It used to be two and a half farrow, and then after that there was, about the same time, there were two horsepower even road. And then they had another one there, three and a half horsepower even road, but big one. And you can almost count when it's turned, and they say, you're in it.
That's so slow, huh?
Yeah, you can almost count it. But it's done pretty good. Sometimes Stockman, Bill Honey fished down here while we were in Ruby, I mean Loudon, and I come down with them. They were going to move up. Stockman had a 2 horsepower, and
This must be
taken
in
above
48,
17 March. We had dance 1 week. We started at 9 o'clock, quit 5 o'clock every morning. 1 week.
Oh my goodness.
And I told him, gee, every time the music started, I said, all the girls run to me. That
you poor fellow. I feel very sorry for you.
Talking
about old-timey kickers, and you said somebody had a two-horse and...
Yes, and there were 2.5 farrows, and then there's 2 horsepower even roads and 3.5 even roads.
You were getting ready to go back up to...
Came down here, Stockman, they were going to move the whole camp up from here, him and Bill Honey fished down here, and there was Peter Bullitt had 2 horsepower, and Bridgewater 2.5, and Burke had 2 horsepower. We had 2.5. And there was about 5 kickers, I think. Only there was 5, and but 11 horsepower, the whole thing.
You added it all up.
And then you add them all up, 2 and 2 and 2, and 2.5, 2.5. Yeah, 11 horsepower for 5 boats, I think. They're all full of fish, and they move one time, and it's going about 2 or 3 miles an hour. They said, you're making good time. Just come up this way, get across on the other side, around the bend, and get up there on this side and through the slough. When you get up there one day, though.
Well, that still must have been a big help over having to row or to line. Did those early kickers burn a mixture of gas and oil? Did those early?
Oh yeah, you got a mixture of gas.
Like
you,
they do today.
Some of you got to do that now too. That's the one we got. We got a 70 now. We had a 5 horse. It's on a tree out there. I bought her around 52.
53.
And and 2 horsepower, mm-hmm. a 5 horsepower, and Johnson. Mm-hmm. And the next we got a 10. She said 7.5, no. And Harvey said, no. Harvey was selling kickers at that time. And I wanted to get the 18, but she said, no, it's too big. So we got a 10. The next time we got an 18, and then next time we got 33. And then we got 33, then we got a 50 after that. And then we got 70 now. Yeah. And then uh-huh. we got the 125 too, but they broke the bracket. It's new, we never used it too. Uh-huh. And we got a little marine or two, 30. Uh-huh.
Is that 70 on the one that's on the boat that we saw down in Old Town this afternoon? Uh-huh. Yeah. That's a nice boat. It has a little house on
it. Oh, yeah. Sometimes we just stay in it. All the time we just tie up and stay inside. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. No rain or wind blown. It's warm.
And
we used to have a long boat with the 33 under and put a tarp over it. But wind blew a truck. Every time we come home, we just put they're half froze when they come home.
Yeah.
Now after that we stay inside and let it blow or rain.
When did people around here first start getting snow machines?
When they first started to build them. Them long tracks alongside Hazel and Gabriel and just few. After that it was getting smaller but more horsepower and making them better. Or now it's a...
You said something to outside, I was trying to remember, that around 65 was the last... I guess that was the dog races you were talking about, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When did you get your first snow machine?
No, when the first, my brother Johnson, first one, I forgot what year, we went to Ruby in the twine. Then we got a Challenger after that. And then after that, we got these ones out here. And them guys, they buy a new one every year, smashed up before spring and roll them over and, yeah. They race too much.
What are the biggest changes that you've seen from people using snow machines instead of dogs?
Oh, it's easier because they go faster and don't have to work on the dogfish or nothing all summer, or they just buy a new machine and then they.
Huh? Dogs is cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. Some guys is using dogs now too.
Uh-huh.
Well, the gas is getting higher all the time.
Mm-hmm. What are they using the dogs for mainly?
Oh, they go out trapping. Uh-huh. We used to use dogs all the time.
Uh-huh. Get wood. Get wood. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. These dogs down here, Larry Houseman, their son-in-law, a couple of years ago, he was going to drive them. He hitched them up. We had a bunch of, about 3 years ago, I think.
Uh-huh.
Had a bunch of fish down the bank down there, pulling fish. I went down and hauled some up. And when I hauled some up, I threw them a whole fish apiece. I didn't know he was going to drive them. And I went down to get another load. And when I came back, he was hitching them up after I feed them. And then when he started, he started like that turn up in there, the slip in there, turn over, but he was down, he just run, and he dogs got away and had snow machine there. Me and my grandchild Verna was there. And we took off after him down there, and we caught him down the lake. I got ahead of him, and we turned him around, and she drove him back and come back, and they started to go back this way, but them dogs couldn't do nothing. And couldn't do all full of them. So he came back and he said, them dogs couldn't do nothing. I told him, I'd just feed them whole fish a piece. He said, no wonder. He said, And what he said, when they came, them dogs started to vomit, to throw up the,
yeah.
all the fish. And, gee, look at that, he said. He said, gee, Joyce is cooking dog, cooking fish now. I don't know if I'm going to eat fish tonight. Then that time he never tried again. We would have tried them, but we got no leader.
Mm.
Archie tried them, but they, no leader at all. They can do it.
Yeah.
Can't go ahead.
You need a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll always lose our leader all the time.
What?
We had some good leaders out there. Yeah.
When you're getting ready to choose a dog to be a leader, what do you look for?
Well, some dogs are smarter than the others, and they, some of them mind pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How can you tell when they're real young?
Oh, well, you gotta make them work first, and then how they work.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do when you train a leader? How do you train a leader?
Well, we tell them good trail, and they tell them gee or haw, and they pretty soon they get onto it right away.
Uh-huh.
And pretty soon they're good leaders, but some you can't learn them. Now. They want to turn around. Some dogs, if you try to make a leader, they need to go like this. They won't know which way they're going to turn. Turn
first
around.
First one way and then the
yeah,
other.
Yeah, you're going to turn around this way or this way.
Uh huh.
You catch them right away.
Uh huh.
Yeah, that's because you used to have good leaders long ago.
What did people do anything different then to train leaders than they do now?
No, about the same.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
Uh huh. You were talking outside about the last time you raced. Maybe we ought to put that story on the tape, too.
Well, after we chopped beef and went, our dogs were in good shape, and went down Kaikuk to sell our skin to Dominic and Ella, and then having a old man race down there. So I got in, too. They said, oh, 50 years old. I was the oldest one in, too. And I beat them guys. Albert Sullivan was second, and Robert Damasco was third at 10.
Uh-huh. And what year was that?
Hmm?
What year?
No, I think it was 65, I think.
Uh-huh.
Long in there. One time we trapped early February, and we got our limit, so we didn't go, we never drove them dogs for near a month. We started to go down Kaikuk. We had seven dogs. And guys help us. Yes. I just stand on the brakes going down. Starting out. Break tow lines, and them Ralph and them guys, they help us. Tie, fix them tow lines. And then we got to Fishing Mountain. It was all right for Fishing Mountain. From there down. I was walking behind them dogs, it's just all tied up too long.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, they get tired.
Uh-huh.
You gotta drive them every day to have them a good shape. These uh-huh. guys that train dogs, they just run their dogs, they use light. Two of these trained dogs is a whole wood, and after they're tough, they never get tired.
Uh-huh.
But they're hauling. Big load all the time, and when you get no load and just nothing, they just take off, never get tired.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But these guys, they just train dogs, just let them run, just nothing, no load. They're not tough that way.
They don't get as well conditioned, you think?
No, yeah. Just not the way we used to train dogs. All big load of wood every day, and when you get nothing on the sled, you just take off and never get tired though.
Let's stop and rest for a minute.
Okay,
Charlie.
Now, it's happy another day.
Uh-huh.
One fall, we pulled our boat out, and I had my boat on the skids, really short back, and I had a tarp over it, long boat, and a stove in it, you call it so. And Wilfred pulled his little gas boat up, one lumber, one, two uh-huh. little doobly, three, four. Kermit, I guess. And talking about hunting, and the
there was lots of ice in the river, and pretty soon it all melted and no more. Took him, tried to get a moose. And then he said, let's go up. He said, we're going to use, I told him, we're going to use our boat, my boat. He said, no, he said, it's too big, you know, if we could freeze in, put it in some place, hard to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'll get to work with putting my boat back in the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Wilford is?
Evans.
Wilford Evans. Okay, yeah. I thought probably.
He had a cat here, a deep old cat. And we started up in the boat, me and Larson and Walter Williams and Sanders Cleaver started, Lou Cleaver, four of us. And he made some beer and he had it in the boat. He went first.
Homebrew,
yeah.
And he stayed overnight below Loudon in the slough up on the other side. And they were talking away from him. Finally, we all went to sleep. And next morning, we started to go up to a Finnish camp. And we stopped in a pretty good place. And we seen only a calf or so. And he said, let's go up there where there's lots of dry cottonwood so we'll have good fire. I told him, it was a little wet at the time. And I told him, this place is good enough. But no, he said, let's go up. So he packed up his stuff and then we went back down the boat, four of us, and we started up. And I was sitting behind him on the water, was sitting alongside me. He was sitting in front like this, and the old man was out here center still. And Indians slowed down. He reached under, and put the lever on the MacLeady, he moved it up. He'd never done that before. And pretty soon, when he was getting too close to that dry cottonwood, big bunch there, and he turned around to me, he said, is that the place? I said, yeah. And then that motor started to slow down and he reached under. He had leather gloves on. He reached under and there's a bolt sticking out on that shaft about this much on the flange. When he reached under, it caught his leather glove here. And then it dropped him on right around the shaft. Broke here. There was about this much or so. Bolt sticking out, bolt sticking up. This one here broke off too right here. When that thing hit, he bumped the engine here, big cut on his face. And he turned around, blood running down. Walter jumped up and he got the flywheel and he turned. I put on his arm, doing that, put it on. And his bones sticking out here, and this one here too.
This are the bones in the upper arm.
I want this whole bone broke off right here. And just about this much hanging on it, so cut all the way across.
His arm cut through except for about 2 or 3 inches there.
Just a little bit right here.
Yeah.
Just about this much, that's all. And this whole arm was hanging.
Lower arm.
Uh-huh, and right here too.
Wrist.
And I just had canvas in there. I grabbed my knife and then I just cut a strip about an inch wide and so long. And I cut it off and I got my knife and I cut it right here and then I tied it up right here. Tight as I can, I just tied it right here.
A tourniquet like?
Huh?
A tourniquet like?
No, yeah, just I put that camera tight and I just tied it up.
Uh-huh.
So it don't leak.
Right around his upper arm, yeah.
And then this one here hanging down and then he's blood in the window where this is just. Right. And then we laid him down behind where we were sitting. And Walter start the motor, we start down. We got stuck a little bit, but we got off. And it was getting slow to tick, 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 tick.
Mm.
And going slow. And finally, we never moved up there. And I was steering. And pretty soon, we found a new station. We thought he was gone. And the policeman said, you know, he said, how far from Vienna? We told him, we're right in front of the station. Oh, he said, yeah. horses here, Potomac. I can use and place these. And the boys put them on a blanket, they packed them up his house.
Father McAmule was here?
Father McAmule was here this time. And he took it to an airport on. They took it off and put that thing on, they put a stick on it and took it, twisted it. They just need a little bit because it's on this side. And Father Mac went back to, they had the station inside the dike behind Yukon Inn. And went back there and looked, there was a wing plane coming up, two motor planes. It just landed at a military. And they took control of the square and he landed here. And they picked him up. And look, there was a nurse on there too. And going up here, loosen it and let it be a little bit. The blood is on this side. This side. And let it be a little bit tightened at Fairbanks. And I've got how many hours Dr. Seibel and Dr. Hagelin work on and put all them bolts back together, put bolts on that. Next time we seen him, he had big cast when he came down. He said, when I woke up, he said, I thought I lost my arm, he said, but he said, I was worried, he said, but I see my fingers out there, he said, sticking up. He thought he was going to cut it off. Just a little bit right here, because when I read the thread here, I seen the thread. Just about this much or so. Wesby said, let's cut it off. A Wesby or a Bishop went up, and they told him, no, we don't supposed to touch that. And they fixed it all up in this one here. After that, he shoot and he worked with it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, Catherine's dead.
When Edgar says just a little bit right here, he's pulling out the sleeve of his shirt and pinching off maybe an inch or an inch and a half of his shirt sleeve to show how little there was left of his arm.
The whole thing, bone is sticking out right here.
At an angle to his arm.
All the way across, the whole thing was cut all the way across.
Oh my.
And it was broken right in here too.
Just above the wrist.
It was wrapped around that shaft. And it just stopped the motor. It was a strong motor, it would have just tore that arm right off.
I have to describe for the tape what you're showing me, because the people who are listening to the tape someday won't be able to see what you're doing, you see? It's good for you to show me, but then I have to put it in words so that the tape makes sense.
Not very much. This is they wanted to cut it, but they told me no.
I'm glad they didn't.
After that, he shoots with his hunting paddle and worked with it.
That's amazing.
Next time we came out here, the big cat when we came down. After that, he was getting better. After that, they took it off.
Now, this was Wilfred Evans that all this happened to.
Larson.
Larson, okay. Charlie Larson, okay.
Catherine's dead. If I wasn't there, I think that guy would have died inside 2 minutes. They said he would have been dead in 2-3 minutes.
With bleeding. You really knew what to do, didn't you?
I just sometimes I just want to tie it out here so I don't bleed it. And I didn't even get scared of nothing. But the old man was sitting there, he said, that's the first time I ever got scared like that, he said, when you see all that blood in the arm. But I didn't even get scared of nothing. I just cut that canvas about this wide and about an inch wide and about 4 feet long, 3-4 feet long. And I tied it up tight. But then when he laid him down, I thought he was gone because nothing never moved.
He was probably in shock.
Yeah, I must be. Till he woke up in front of the train station, I guess, and he wouldn't know where we were. And when we got down here, he again, then we know Walter Williams run up the bank and tell them guys they all run there. We cut them up. And look at that plane was just.
That was real lucky.
Yeah, the plane was just coming from the unit. You can tell him to stop this guy.
What year was that? Do you remember?
I don't remember. It was the 40 something.
Was it after the war?
He just didn't die.
Huh?
He just didn't die.
After
the 40, that's when GIs come in here.
Before the GIs came here?
No. Way after that.
Wait, okay. So after World War II, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was army here already.
Uh-huh.
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 But they didn't have no doctor here.
Uh-huh. Well, that's really good.